Daniel Beatty won an Obie, among many other honors, in 2006 for his one-man show Emergency, in which he played more than 40 characters. His latest effort, Through the Night, has a narrower focus, just a group of six black men interconnected through work and community, all struggling with questions of identity, race, and family. It's on stage at the Union Square Theater, and the reviews have been glowing, and I'm very pleased to welcome Daniel Beatty back to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
On the playbill, they only have three of you.
Yes.
They ran out of space? What happened when you were 40?
You know, you just do use one image then.
This play centers on father-son relationships. Is that a particularly important issue for you?
It really is a very important issue to me, starting with my personal background. I grew up in a household where my father was a heroin addict and a dealer and was in and out of prison most of my growing up. And I had a real concept of who I could be in the world based on who he was in his absence. And so part of my work is, how do you heal what has been broken? And so this relationship is very important to me.
Well, didn't your brother also have a substance abuse problem? He became a crack addict. How did you escape a similar fate?
Well, you know, I largely say it was because I had a dynamic mother who was there and who was believing in me and fighting for me, but I also had wonderful teachers. One of my teachers in particular, Mavis Jackson, played Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech back when they were playing videotapes, and I saw another example as a child of who a black man could be, and I said, I want to do that. I want to use words to inspire just like Dr. King.
Well, did you imagine yourself becoming a writer, to use the words, or a performer?
Well, you know,
he became a preacher. Did you consider that?
You know, it's interesting. I actually started writing the speeches from the time I was in third grade. She helped me write my first speech in third grade, and it was called I Think the Best, I Expect the Best. And that eventually led me to perform.
Sounds like one of your characters. Right? I know, write something like that.
Exactly, exactly. But, you know, she understood early on the importance of self-talk and how I had to start talking to myself differently than what my life was showing me in order to create a different kind of life.
Well, it obviously worked because you eventually wound up at Yale. Were you studying theater there?
I was actually studying English and music there, and then I went on and studied theater later at the American Conservatory Theater.
You got an MFA there.
I got an MFA there, yes.
How did you choose the particular form of theater that you do, portraying a group of different characters to tell a story?
You know, my training is, you know, very vast. I trained as an opera singer. I've trained as a classical actor and also the ability to do new work. But I just feel like there's issues in society that are so urgent that I wanted to talk about. And I found that this combination of the motivational speaking, I also was a poet, the singing, the ability to play characters would all come together in a very exciting way in these solo plays.
So you sing and you have poetry and these performances as well. I was thinking about Anna Deavere Smith to some degree, although she plays real people usually. How close are your characters to people that you've known?
You know, I always say the work is not literally autobiographical, but is emotionally autobiographical, because I really endeavor to create very dimensional characters. And in order for there to be a lot of dimension, I have to really believe in them and come from my heart.
You're from Dayton, Ohio?
Dayton, Ohio, yes.
But my sense was that your setting in this play is New York.
Well, you know, I've been a New Yorker for about 10 years, and it's such a rich and diverse community, and so I love creating characters based here.
One of the things, Anna Deavere Smith will put on a different piece of clothing or glasses or something like that. You don't do any of that. You just simply trust in body language.
Yes, body language, distinct changes of voice, high, low, different accents and dialects, and also the emotional inner life of the characters all causes them to change.
You play six black men and boys ranging in age from 10 to 60 on a single night when they each have some tough decisions to make. Hasn't it been performed with a full cast in some previous incarnations?
Absolutely. It used to be called Resurrection. It was performed at Arena Stage, Hartford Stage, Philadelphia Theater Company, and at ETA in Chicago. And those were really wonderful performances, and the audiences loved them. But I also was feeling that there was a deeper level that I wanted to go into the characters, into the play, and so that's how I visited it as a solo play.
You also give us the mothers, the wives, and the girlfriends of these main characters.
Yes. One of the lines in the play is that women often love men more than we love ourselves. And I thought it was very important in showing this portrait of a community of black men to also show the people in their lives that love them.
Would you be tempted to at least put on some kind of a costume change? Or is it important to you to play all these different characters without any benefit?
I find that I don't need it. I find that the actor's instrument, when it is really fine-tuned, can create all the magic you need without any costume pieces.
You begin with 10-year-old Eric and his father, who's known only as Mr. Rogers, who runs a health food store in Harlem. Eric's mom works two jobs, so Mr. Rogers has the main parenting responsibility, which is not all that common in the black community.
Absolutely. Part of what I think theater can do is it can show a new possibility. I'm not interested in, just doing a repetition of reality. If we want to do that, we can go to watch reality TV or unfortunately what I think is a lot of entertainment. I think if people are going to spend their money and their time and come sit down in the theater, there needs to be something new that's shown.
Well, Mr. Rogers has a health food store. Predictably, it's not doing all that well. I see another theme emerging here. Do you feel that African Americans aren't doing enough to take charge of their own health?
Health is a huge issue in the play, whether it's the health, physical health like this health food store, or there's an issue of diabetes that's brought up and also HIV/AIDS, but also a mental, emotional health. And I think, in the African American community, as in all communities, there is a constant need to remind ourselves about our health.
And the diabetes involves a preacher known to his congregation as Bishop. We meet him at an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. He's addicted to ho-hos.
Yes, he is.
Sugar can be as destructive as drugs in its own way.
Absolutely. Sugar, I know something personally about that myself. We all have our poisons, and I fortunately did not follow the path of my brother or father in terms of addiction to drugs. But, sometimes when life is a little too emotional, I went to food, and so even though I'm not a 60-year-old bishop with diabetes, I was able to really connect to that aspect of the character.
In the neighborhood, diabetes is often called sugar.
Yes.
So people know, but it doesn't affect their eating habits?
Absolutely. The play, it's called Through the Night, and it's called Through the Night because all of these men are trying to make it through the night. But one of the main issues
is... It's also a line in one of the poems.
It is, absolutely. But one of the real questions is, why should we? And that leads to the point I think you were just asking. There's a lot of things that we know, but I think we sometimes need a context, or we need to see it in another way that makes us open our eyes to why should we should be greater than the problems we know exist.
My guest is Daniel Bain, whose play Through the Night is currently being performed at the Union Square Theater. He plays a range of different characters, mostly six men, but also some of the women in their lives. And is this an open run?
It is an open run.
And the reviews have been terrific, so I'm assuming it's going to be there for a while.
Well, that's what we're hoping. And we also have had some really wonderful celebrities join us who say that this is a special show and we think people should come out and see it. Bill Cosby and Ruby Dee, Felicia Rashad, Ben Vereen, Brian Stokes Mitchell. They've all come out to see the play and put their names behind it.
Calling themselves your artistic ambassadors.
Yes. We need those ambassadors out there spreading the word.
Well, this is something that we've seen a bit in the black community. The Broadway show Fela got some big name above the title producers, Jay-Z and Will and Jada Pinkett Smith. Is it almost necessary in today's economic climate to have a few household names attached to a show?
I think it certainly helps. It helps initially spread the word, Once people get into the seats, they have to find something there that they value. And fortunately, we've been finding that the audiences have been on their feet every night, and we've been able to get this really beautiful, diverse audience, which is great to see.
Well, one of the major concerns over the years has been getting younger people to come to theater, and people of color to come to theater.
Sure.
There, one problem is live theater can be rather expensive when it comes to buying tickets, meaning that you have to be middle class or wealthy, and traditionally it's been mostly white audiences. Do you see that changing?
You know, as long as, you know, wonderful to producers like Daryl Roth, who's producing this show, continues to take a chance on artists. I mean, I have a proven track record with my play Emergency, but still you need someone to believe in you and give you another chance like she is with Through the Night. But what we're finding now is we're seeing people of all races. We're seeing old and young. And something very special is happening in the audience in terms of the listening and the responses afterwards.
Two of the other characters are Bishop's son, Isaac, who's a record company executive, and Twan, the boy that he's mentoring. Twan has just graduated from high school, and he's going to go on to college. And you're talking here a bit about successful black men with no kids having a responsible to mentor. But also, Isaac is struggling with his own sexuality, which is another hot button topic. And I'm not sure that Carl Paladino would approve of this relationship.
Well, I think Carl would love for Carl Paladino to sit down in the theater, and we can all have a talk back afterwards. Yes, you know, Isaac is a black man who's technically on the down low, but, you know, his mentee actually knows very well what's going on in his life. And it's very important to me in a conversation about African-American men that this aspect be included. And there's so many things going on in our world now, whether it's the gay beatings in the Bronx or the questions with Bishop Eddie Long or the statements that Paladino has made. There's so much going on where it's clear this topic is still very hot.
And it's still a concern. Isaac has a girlfriend for a cover, but
yes,
there's pressure on him to come out, but he's afraid to.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, his father is the bishop of this church, you know, so there's this whole conversation of religion, and then there's this conversation of him being in the music business on the side of marketing and, you know, the aspect of, you know, the sex and verse and sexuality in that business. And I really wanted to show in the play first him as a man. So before we discover anything about his sexuality, we discover that he's this corporate executive on his power, mentoring this young man. And then about halfway through the play, we discover his sexuality, you know, because it's an aspect of his humanity rather than just the defining factor.
Well, it's kind of difficult to describe the show without making it sound like a civics lesson. How do you manage to get across these points but still keep it entertaining?
Well, you know, I would say audiences are laughing in the show 30 to 40% of the time, you know, and I do that very purposely. You know, it's, you know, it is ultimately entertaining, but the best way to do it is to create truly dimensional characters. I had this woman come up to me, looked like she was in her 70s, literally weeping after the show, and she said to me, "I've literally seen every man that I've known in my life on that stage tonight." And that is how you create entertainment rather than civics. You create true heart. The characters are contradictory. They're divine. And then they're also deeply flawed. You know, they're questioning and then they figured out some things. And it's this really layered portrayal that lets you fall in love or question the people you're seeing. And then their politics are just part of it.
We didn't mention another character here, Dre, who's HIV positive and ex-con recovering addict, but he is somebody else who you probably connect to some degree because of the drug addiction in your own family.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this play was started for me because there's a statistic that the Urban League put out that 1 in 3 black boys born in 2010 would spend time in prison. 1 in 3. And this book also had a series of scholarly essays about the main issues facing black men in America. So I wanted to really go into the internal landscape of the hearts and the thoughts that are behind the cause of these statistics and these issues. And so that's a big part of why you see these different issues in the play. But the result of me doing that is that people, particularly African Americans, but all people are coming to the play and they're realizing that they see people there that they recognize from their own lives because the statistics don't lie. These are real things people are facing.
You've launched a project called Shine the Light. What's that?
Shine the Light is a project where we have a not-for-profit conduit that's taking donations to underwrite tickets for high school and junior high students to come see the play, either for a subsidized ticket or, in some cases, a free ticket if they really can't afford. And to this point, we've already started to get some donations. We're definitely looking for more because it was important to me for exactly you said, one of the reasons why the audience for the American Theater is largely white and older is because of the cost. And so the producer, Del Rath, and I both have a commitment that we're going to get young people in these seats.
Well, some people might be upset by some of the things you talk about being presented to kids, but what's been the reaction of the students?
You know, the reactions of the students are amazing. I mean, some of them have written me to my website. You know, they stay afterwards. Some have tears in their eyes. Some are like, you know, that's amazing. How do you do that? But what I'll say is this. I was an educator through the DreamYard program and through BAM for 4.5 years as my career was starting to take off. And I was in some of the most challenged schools in the Bronx, in Harlem, and in Brooklyn. Our young people are living through much worse than I would ever talk about in this play. And part of the reason why they are not being reached is because we're not telling stories that are layered enough to speak to the urgency of their experience. And so they see this show and they see that something real is happening and it invigorates them and it excites them.
You write as well as perform. Can you write while you're performing? Can you be working on your next project, or do you have to finish the run?
I actually do more than one project at once. Right now I'm working on another play called Breath and Imagination, which is the story of Roland Hayes, the first African-American classical singer of world renown, who I think a lot of people don't know about, but I'm excited to share, and which will allow me to also do more of my singing. And I also have a play called Tearing Down the Walls that's opening at ETA in Chicago in December. That's an ensemble play that I'm not acting in.
And we have this one, which originally ran at the Riverside Church.
Yes.
Is that where Daryl Roth saw it?
That is where Daryl Roth, she came up to Harlem. You know, Daryl Roth is an amazing woman. She was just in Harlem last night at the Studio Museum. She's all over the place. So she saw it there and brought it to the Union Square Theater,
which is at 100 East 17th Street. And if you want ticket information, you can go to our website at wnyc.org. My great thanks to the man who wrote it. You didn't direct it, did you?
I did not. It was directed by the wonderful Charles Randolph Wright.
Well, directing in this case means telling you better be on that side of the stage or this side of the stage, because I think pretty much everything else grows out of your character.
Absolutely. There's actually a gorgeous set, though, and we have projections and a wonderful lighting design and some wonderful sound, so he coordinated all those aspects as well.
Thank you so much, Daniel Beatty. The play is Through the Night, and it's currently at the Union Square Theater.
Thank you so much, Leonard.